This week on The Nerdy Rat, we're going to talk about the most anticipated movie of the year, The Emoji Movie, starring Patrick Stewart as the poop emoji.
What?
Just kidding, we're going to talk about Defenders.
Good.
Welcome, everybody. It is Wednesday, the 23rd of August.
And yes, this is the Nerdy Rat.
Episode 11.
Yes, I'm Liz.
I'm Matt. And
we're going to start talking about ratty stuff.
Yeah, I'm like looking back at the episodes that we've done trying to figure out what we're going to talk about. And I can't believe we've done 11 episodes already.
This is 12 because we started with episode 0.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
So that's been
4 months of doing this,
really?
Right?
Or 6 months, right?
No, it's 4 months because I think we're averaging 2 a month at this point, at this rate.
Okay.
But
it's still 6.
Yeah, because I mean, my original idea was
12 divided
by
2 is 6, so 6 months.
Okay. Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe that.
I know.
That is even crazier. So let's talk about some ratty stuff.
Some ratty news.
We've had some changes to our group over the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Yep.
As you all know, we lost Tippy Toe. We talked about that last week, and that was that was sad. But
we have another rat, of course, already.
I was on the Facebook page for Small Angels, and I saw a posting for the single rat. Her name is Krisa, and her mom was moving, and they were moving to a place where they couldn't have pets. And so I saw this single girl, and she had lived alone, and apparently that was just the mother didn't really know that much about rats, and she had gotten her from like a pet store, and they never really educated her on
which is common, pet stores don't know either.
And apparently she was having conversation with the coordinator for Small Angels, and hopefully in the future she will actually be adopting some rats. And
she said when she's able to own rats again, based on her living situation, she's like, she learned so much, and now she's gonna adopt 2 or 3 the next time she gets them.
Yeah, and that's
so great. Yeah.
And so I saw that, and I messaged Liz, and I said, Liz, we gotta look at this advertisement.
Yes.
I feel like we have to, like, right after losing Tippy Toe,
I know
a single rat girl.
Yes.
And she's about 2 years old. She's full grown.
Yep. And you know, of course, I wanted to adopt the rat. I always want to adopt more rats. So
back at 9 now.
We already had
the cage ready so we could take our time with introductions. You know,
right? We have an extra cage. We have a cage for our fosters. But after our last hamster died, we didn't get another hamster, so we had the hamster cage, which is also a Martin.
Well, it's not really a hamster cage.
It's a rat.
It is the rat.
The
Martin
cage.
680. It's the same one that most of the fosters use for rats.
Uh-huh.
It's great for 2 to 4 rats.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was nice we had that extra cage so we could put Krisa in it. And we knew from our experience with Toro, who we adopted after he'd been single his whole life, that it was probably going to be a slow introduction period. It was probably going to be a little bit difficult, but we were better prepared for it this time because we had successfully done it with Toro. And we kind of knew better going in what to expect.
Yeah, definitely. I think I think it went really well for
it did
her history of not really being with other rats or not interacting with rats. Rats are so naturally friendly. Like they're such natural community. Like even ones that have been isolated for so long, they're such natural community animals that when given the opportunity, they adjust to colony life really well.
Yeah, I think she was longing for it. Kind of like Toro, he was longing for it before he was ready for it, you know. Because, like, the first 2 days we did playtime in the Great Wall, and she did get into some squabbles. And I think it was because she had been alone, so she wasn't sure what was threatening behavior from the other rats and what was just normal behavior. Because, like, they were just trying to groom her, and they did pin her a little bit the first day, so then we broke it up when she got upset. But the second day, they were just trying to lick her, and she freaked out and started fighting with them. And so then after that, what I did is I switched and used the bonding pouch for the next 4 or 5 days with her and some other ratties in there. So she would get more comfortable just being with other rats and feel less nervous and less scared.
Yeah.
Before we tried the wall again.
Yeah, it went pretty well. It definitely wasn't my worst introduction that I've ever had to do.
Right.
But it did take a little bit longer than some that we've had.
I think that's probably typical when they've been isolated, because I think they just really need to relearn like their social behaviors, and they need to learn the social cues from the other rats. So
yeah, and I think it freaked her out a little bit when she first was like being groomed, and like when they would pin her, and like,
because she didn't know if they were trying to fight her, or she didn't know what was happening. And I think because she couldn't assess the threat level accurately, she just freaked out. But once she kind of was in the pouch with them for a couple of days, and also she is an explorer girl, like our girl Nim. So she, once she kind of got over her joy at being in the pouch with other rats, she actually would go out and explore like under the blanket with me on the chair. And then the other rats would go and explore and play under there too. So she got kind of used to like just chilling with the other rats, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it made it easier for her. And then when we did the wall again after that, she did just fine. Now, Pinky did have a few little issues with her. She's our wannabe alpha. But Pinky had some issues with Toro, too. But she and Pinky have worked it out pretty much. And nothing serious happened after the days of the bonding pouch. So we did like about 3 more days total, I think, with the Great Wall before we tried putting her in the cage. And by the time we put her in the cage, she was totally fine. And she did a great job.
I'm really happy with how it how she's integrated into our group. I feel mm-hmm. like it couldn't have really gone better than it did. But we posted a video on YouTube of it too.
Oh, we did, of some of the introductions with the Great Wall, right? Yeah. That's what we posted.
It's on our, I'll put a link in the show notes definitely. To our YouTube channel, and I'm gonna put any rat related videos I'm going to put up there.
Yeah.
I have my own personal YouTube channel, but I mostly put like gaming stuff on there. So I'm going to put everything for our, that's related to rats, on our Nerdy Rat channel.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, it was a very fun video with the introductions and everything. And one thing that's really nice, I think Nim has really been missing Tippy Toe a lot, because they were really good friends. And Nim has really become best friends with Krisa. And that's just so sweet to see. And like, I think she appreciates having another girl in the cage who's not one of her daughters, because I think it feels a little more social. Like, yeah, she doesn't have to be mommy.
It was really cute, too, because when we first got Krisa, she had some of the little crusties on her eyes.
Yeah, from the porfing.
Because she didn't really have anybody to, like, groom her.
And exactly.
Since we've had her, she's been completely...
completely clean.
Yeah, completely taken care of.
Yes, no more crusties on her eyes. And that's funny. It reminded me of Athena, because Athena had come in after her sisters died, and she had been alone for a few months, so she was having a lot of porfing, too. And Nim cleaned her up too.
Yeah.
In fact, Athena's parents even commented on how clean Nim was keeping her.
Well, Nim is definitely a licker, and she'll groom us if we let her too.
Oh yeah. In fact, I think a lot of our rats are lickers. Baby Groot, well, for sure.
Toro is now
Toro,
too.
Yeah.
I think they kind of pick it up from her. I think rats really learn behaviors from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed in the past when I've had ill-behaved rats and I put them with behaved rats, it will improve the behavior of the ill-behaved rats.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad it doesn't go the other way.
I bet it could, but
the
well behavior came from my interaction with them.
Right.
So I think that's helped. When they can see other rats behaving that way, I think that helps them to.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Up. Yeah.
And our fosters are going to be getting adopted.
I know. And that makes me really sad, because I'm really bonding with them. And we've had them for a while now.
Yeah, they've really chilled out since we got them neutered.
Yeah, the rescue decided to get them neutered because they were fighting a little bit.
They had fought like, we didn't have to put them in separate cages, but they had definitely gotten into it. And they were spending a lot of time kind of in their own separate corners of the cage.
Yeah.
And I could tell the aggression was just going to continue to escalate.
Right.
And eventually, a lot of times they'll get to a point where they'll start hurting each other.
And we did not want that to happen. The rescue didn't want that to happen. And honestly, since they have been neutered, they snuggle together so much more. And before they got neutered, they weren't really willing to sit in the bonding pouch with me too much. They just wanted to be like out and about. And now they will just cuddle in the bonding pouch with me so much, which is why they're getting so attached to them now.
They're much calmer now. Mm-hmm. They're even much calmer. With us.
They're like easier to pick up.
Yeah. They're less, I mean, they're still a little skittish every now and then, but not nearly the way they were.
No. And they just seem so much happier with each other and just happier in general.
Yeah.
Much more loving. So I highly recommend getting your boys neutered. It's so good for them.
It's just all upsides. There's no really downside. It's not like, I mean, with girls, it's like kind of, for me, it's mandatory because of the tumors.
Exactly. But for the boys, too, I feel like it's also mandatory because it just affects their behavior so much in the positive when you get it done.
I've always gotten every. And it's cheaper generally to get the boys neutered than it is to get females spayed.
Yeah, that is
too.
Usually true as well.
So, like, I know.
Because, you know, it's just an exterior surgery instead of an interior one.
Depending on the vet you go to, they may charge the same. But
generally,
if they're basing it off on how difficult the procedure is, a lot of times they'll make the, like our one vet does it for half the price of what they spay
for the females.
So
I'm really gonna miss them. They have just become so loving and sweet, and like they beg for attention, and of course they give it to them, and it's gonna be hard. I'm gonna miss them.
We can't adopt anymore.
I know. And honestly, I'm content to not have to do intros again for a little while, because it takes a lot of patience to do the intros. So
it does. It really does. It's a
slow process.
Yeah. It's definitely. Now, we've had some that it went really fast, like Lily.
Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes it was when all of our rats were a little more geriatric, it was easier to do the intros. Yeah. Like we had a couple in a row that we could just put right in the cage after testing them in the bathtub to make sure they didn't fight.
That was in a period, too, where we had just lost most of our real dominant rats.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so we were basically just left with some real submissive rats, and
sad rats too, because the rats really do get attached to each other, and they feel it when they lose a friend and a companion.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think Nim has been so happy to have Carissa, because it just, you know, it comforts her. She has her bestie again, because especially too, like, I feel like kind of the boys kind of paired up, and her babies, like it was Baby Groot and Pinky are besties, and like Annie and Squeaks are besties, and like Nim lost her bestie, you know? So I think she really enjoys having someone around again.
Yeah. You always see them together too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm happy about that. So, you know what? I forgot to put on the outline, but I worked on introducing my parakeets to each other this week. Now,
oh, yeah, you did.
I did. The reason why I haven't done this prior to this point is because my little parakeet Cookie Monster was the most frightened bird. He refused to be finger tamed. He didn't want you trying to interact with him. He would fly away and freak out if you even tried to touch him. For years now, this has gone on. So I finally just got to the point where I gave up, but that actually made him trust me more, because he finally realized, okay, she's not going to try to touch me. She's going to leave me alone. She's going to be loving to me, but mommy's not going to try to like boop my nose or anything anymore. But he started seeing that I would interact with Big Bird and how friendly Big Bird was. And, you know, and he really started showing me that he wanted to interact with me. Like he'd reach his little head out, and he'd still get freaked out at first. But the last several weeks, he has gotten so confident and brave. Like, he'll boop me again and again, and he'll like bop back and forth and like give me kiss kiss. And he's getting finger tame now, where he'll sit on my finger. And I could just tell the two boys, just like the rats would when they were by themselves and wanted to be together, like they are longing to be with each other in the same cage.
I wasn't sure when you first tried introducing them. I was like, but I'm not that familiar with bird behavior either.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. Because I was like, it looks like they're kind of like
fighting.
But they weren't getting real violent. So
no,
like,
the thing is, they were like booping each other back and forth with their beaks. But you know what? I think that's kind of the problem too, is that they've both lived alone their whole lives. And so they don't really remember like how to feed each other probably at first. And like to them, like that's playful behavior because that's the way they interact with me, to be playful. But then the problem is Big Bird's like twice as big as Cookie Monster. And sometimes he'd boop him a little too hard and Cookie Monster would fall off the perch. Yeah. But he was okay. He wasn't scared too much, and like he would come back and interact again. So I let them interact for, you know, about 5 or 10 minutes. And then I put them both. So what I had done to do that is they each live in separate cages, and I took them each out and put them together in a smaller cage so there wouldn't be any dominance issues with like territorial things. So it wasn't like one was going in the other one's cage. And then after about 5 or 10 minutes, I separated them again and put them back in their own cages. And now Cookie Monster, he got out while I was doing that. I had them in a small room, so it was okay. But he did so much better even flying around in the room than he's done other times he's gotten out. Like, he was actually able to land on stuff. And then I could tell he didn't want to get on my finger, so I took his little landing perch from inside his cage out, and he climbed on that, and then I put it back in his cage. But he let me do that, and then he's been okay afterwards. He hasn't been traumatized.
Yeah.
He's kind of gotten his courage
back.
Well,
that kind of discouraged you before, was when you tried stuff with him. He would act like he was absolutely
terrified.
Just broken afterwards.
Yes. And so that's why I was like, I can't do this with him. I'm like, I just can't do it with him. It upsets him, and I don't want to do that to him.
I think with any animal, you just have to have patience.
Yeah.
And not give up.
Exactly. And like, it's taken him 2 years. And, you know, I would have been fine too if he never wanted to move in with Big Bird. But I feel like he really wants to, and that made me want to try to help him, you know?
Yeah.
And Big Bird was so happy when they were in the cage together. Big Bird could not stop singing. Like, he was just beside himself with joy that he was in the same cage with Cookie Monster.
Well, it would be nice if we can get them introduced and we only have one giant bird cage
instead of two
giant birds. Instead of two,
because each one
room.
Is like almost as big as the Double Critter Nation.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we started doing this because we finished our living room finally.
Yes, we have a fixer-upper.
We've been refinishing our living room for over a year now.
Yeah, like a year and a half. It's taken a long time.
Remember, because you saw the Facebook post that said, oh, look, we started painting the ceiling a year ago. And I
was like, exactly.
I have to get this done now.
I know. So we bought a fixer-upper, and we you know, knew it was going to take a while. And it's hard, too, because like when we work and stuff, you don't always have the energy to do stuff on the weekends to the house. So there's definitely been month-long periods of maybe even many months where we didn't work on it at all. So
it's hard to keep going when you're just two people working on it,
like, trying to fit it in. Plus, because, you know, we always have other stuff going on. Like, in this time period, you've like replaced the kitchen sink, you've had to deal with stuff on the roof, we've had to clean the gutters some weekends. I do a lot of landscaping, so, you know, it's like there's always something else going on.
But we've accomplished a lot in this 2 years we've owned this house?
Yeah,
now.
Like 2.5 years.
We've completely redone the basement, completely redone the living room.
Yep.
I'm working on my...
So we've almost got Cookie Monster brave enough to live with Big Bird.
So
you know what? Also with him, he lost his friend, Mrs. Kermit. And he loved her, and he was never the same after she died. They lived in separate cages, but he just hasn't been himself since she died. And, you know, he really loves having Big Bird next to him as his next door neighbor. And I think it's just taken him like this long to kind of get over it and get brave enough. Yeah. So, yeah, patience.
All right, well, let's move on. Talk about some nerdy stuff. So we saw Defenders.
Yes, we watched the whole series. It only took us about 3 days.
Fair warning, we're going to spoil
spoilers.
It.
Spoilers.
Because, although I feel like there's not a whole lot to spoil.
Yeah. My disappointment was partly that it was so short. I was disappointed it was only 8 episodes. I was hoping for like 12 or 14.
I was disappointed. What did you think of it overall? What would you give it out of 10?
Out of 10, I would probably give it a 7 or an 8.
I think that's fair. I might go a little bit lower than that. I might give it like a 6 or a 7, I think.
Yeah, I felt...
It's not as bad
as Iron Fist.
Iron Fist is much better than Iron Fist.
It is. But unfortunately, there's still a lot of Iron Fist in it. Yeah. But they do try to like call him out on his stuff.
Some of the best parts, I think, of the whole series are basically other people's reaction to Danny.
Yes.
And it felt for parts of it almost like Danny was going to be the boss, of, like the bad guy of the show. Because
yeah.
He's constantly fighting with everybody. It's like,
because... And I felt like the writers for Defenders got kind of written into a corner because it's different ones, I guess, than who did the Iron Fist. And Iron Fist got such negative reviews, and they didn't write the Defenders series until after the Iron Fist series came out and they saw those negative reviews. And so they were a little written into a corner. So I felt like they did the best they could.
They had to
having everybody else address his poor behavior.
They had to address the character of Danny Rand because he's a bad character, but it's just kind of like, what is his purpose other than like this whole hand thing that he doesn't even seem to understand himself, and he he never seems to have a good plan.
Right. Oh, he doesn't what to ever. Do. And then he hates anybody who tries to help him.
Yeah. And it's like, he, I don't know. Like,
really bothered me was how poorly he continues to treat Colleen, who's his girlfriend. And like, he's just so mean to her. Like, especially the first three episodes.
Bothered me. I don't like Colleen's character because I don't understand what she sees in him.
And it's not realistic.
It's not really written in a way that would make you believe that. I mean, because her whole arc of like being raised in the clan,
right,
and as like this cult makes sense. So I guess her relationship with Danny can be explained a little bit as she has no one else to go to.
And also maybe she has no context for healthy relationships. If I'm being generous with the writing, you could say, well, she was raised in a cult, so maybe she doesn't realize that you aren't supposed to be treated so poorly in life by other people.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know, but I don't really buy it. She's a smart woman, and she calls Danny out on his stuff too all the time, except on his treatment of her.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they don't have any interaction that you would expect from two people that are
romantically involved.
Yeah. Like, at no point do they do anything, you know?
They don't even seem like they like each other that
much.
Yeah,
like, they never kiss, they never, like, talk to each other romantically.
True.
Like, it's just like two people that know each other.
Like, in the Iron Fist series, they did have some romantic interactions.
If I hadn't seen Iron Fist, I would think they were brother and sister or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's...
Like, Claire and Luke had a lot of romance, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
And even Jessica and Luke, you could tell they had a history.
Yeah.
But, you can't even tell with Danny and Colleen.
Yeah, you can't. You can't.
You
tell
would
at
never
all.
Guess.
I'm kind of hoping that this is the start of a better arc for Danny's character, because like at the end,
I hope so.
Where he was like, he was sitting the way Daredevil sat mm-hmm. and he was like looking over the city.
Uh-huh.
Because at the end, you know, Daredevil tells him like, look after my city.
Exactly.
And I'm kind of hoping that he realizes like, I haven't really been doing anything to help this city.
That's kind of what I was hoping too, is that the writers were very cleverly giving his character an out so that he has some new purpose.
I just hope the writers are self-aware of where they've gotten this character to.
Well, I hope I really hope they have someone different run the next Iron Fist series, because if they let the same person do it and the same writers do it, I just don't think it's going to be good at all.
My other problem with the series as a whole was like, I felt like the ending was kind of anticlimactic.
Whatever. Yes, whatever it is.
Whatever that word is, that's what it was. Because like, they just kind of all right, so basically the big secret is that we've got old dragon bones that make everybody immortal, and all the foot, or the, not the foot, the all the hand care about is living forever.
Yeah.
That's it. Like it was way cooler when we didn't know that much about him. When they kind of exposed everything about him, they didn't seem all that menacing anymore. Like they... It's just kind of like...
Yeah.
It was better when it was unknown. You know?
Well, and I think... I just felt like too... I don't know. Like... They are just like, oh, the police didn't file a report, so no one's going to go to jail or anything like that. Like, seriously, the police can't just not file a report. Like, come on now. Like, that's ridiculous.
There was a lot of little kind of mini plot holes that you had to overlook in the series. The writing was not as strong as in, like, Jessica Jones
or Luke Cage. Or Daredevil, even. Although the first Daredevil series was better than the second one.
Yeah, I would rate them, like...
I would say maybe I'm going down to a six.
I would go like Luke Cage. Uh-huh. It's kind of going by like. I don't know. Luke Cage was probably my favorite, followed by Jessica Jones. Then the first season of Daredevil and the second season of Daredevil.
I think I love Jessica and Luke equally, but in different ways. So I would probably give them a tie for first place. But yeah, then first Daredevil, second Daredevil, Defenders.
I just really got hooked into the Luke. I didn't think I would like the Luke Cage as much as I did, but it really...
Oh, it was powerful. It was powerful.
It was good writing in Luke
Cage. I loved it, but it was also good writing in Jessica Jones, and it was just different themes and different stories, but yeah, I loved them both.
That's true.
I loved them both for different reasons.
Yeah, I'm hoping if they do another series, I hope the Punisher gets back to that.
Well, and I would like to see... I think... What's that blonde girl's name who was the paralegal for Matt? His kind of quasi-girlfriend.
Yeah.
What's her name? I can't remember what
her name
is.
I don't remember her name, but I keep thinking of her as Jessica because that was her the actor's name in True Blood. Oh. But I know that's
not her character. No, it's not. But anyway, Karen. I think it's Karen.
Karen, that's right.
But I think I heard she's going to be in the Punisher series. And I think...
Well, that makes sense.
The thing that I did like is that they clearly... tied off her and Matt's storyline together as far as romance. Like, he was like, look, I'm not going to quit being Daredevil. This is who I am. We have to go our separate ways.
I feel like that was like the whole way they handled that felt like the Iron Fist bad. Writers screwing
it did.
It up.
I felt like that too.
Because I feel like at some point, like just because you disapprove of someone's lifestyle doesn't mean you stop being their friend.
No, I didn't feel like she should stop being his friend either. I thought that was kind of... I thought her and Foggy were both kind of ridiculous.
Well, they both had this super codependent vibe. Like,
yes, with Matt.
Like they've separated themselves from him, but like still...
We're not going to
be happy till you make a life decision that we're comfortable
exactly,
with.
Exactly, that we approve of.
Which he was trying to do, and he just was not happy with. And they could... Like, they could see that, but they were like... We don't want you to be happy.
And also, we don't want you to save the city. Forget the city. Forget helping people that need help. Like, no.
No, we just want you to make us feel
exactly. Just make us happy, Matt. No, I totally agree. I feel like
a more realistic take would be like, if you're going to separate yourself, you have to accept that they are who they are.
Exactly.
And come to a point where you can still...
Either be their friend or be their enemy.
Either be their friend or leave them alone.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I feel like it was just a... Just kind of like, I thought Luke Cage was amazing in this, though. I feel like Luke Cage is a character that I loved too. That no amount of writing can screw up because the actors just own those roles so well.
I felt like that actually about Luke, Jessica, and Matt in this series. I felt like they all really owned their character so well. And like Jessica, like, I just love that she's still the broken alcoholic mess. She really hasn't fixed herself, but I liked at the end of the series, they gave her a little bit of hope that she at least is going to like start her detective business again. So
I liked when they were taking the subway.
Oh, I know. She stole the guy's beer.
Stole the homeless guy's beer.
I know. No, I really love her. So I'm happy to see her being herself, I guess. And I think, but you know, I felt like, they took too long to get the Defenders together, first of all. Like, if you only have an 8-episode series, you shouldn't take 3-4 episodes to get everyone together.
I was happy with the pace they were going. I just wish they would have done a regular 12 or 13 episode.
Yeah, like, if it had been 12 or 13 episodes, I wouldn't have minded taking 3 or 4 episodes.
Like, they did a lot of build-up that they neglected to do in the other series.
Right, like, I didn't actually have a problem with that, except that the series was so short. Because
they really could have integrated the first 3 episodes of the season into... the previous seasons of like either they could have done an Iron Fist really easily. They could have done parts of it in Luke Cage or, you know, like beats that could have gotten integrated elsewhere and they could have gotten more into.
I think part of the problem is that they didn't really have too much of a story, you know, like you said, like there wasn't much of a climax. There wasn't much of anything. Even Electra, like, when she finally owns her power and kills,
That was kind of like
the chief hand person. Like, well, then they did nothing with Electra for the rest of the series.
That was like the climax of the series, and then nothing happened afterwards.
And
really,
like, you know, at first she was conflicted about Matt, and you thought maybe they'll develop that some more. And then it's like, oh no, I'm just going to kill you. And then, oh haha, we love each other as we're dying. Like, that just, come on now. Yeah, and like, why did you just abandon that storyline?
Matt's decision at the end to run back in.
Yeah.
It made zero sense. Like,
oh no, actually, I understood that because he didn't want to save her, but I think he just wanted, he loved her and he didn't want to lose her again. Because remember how upset he was when she died the first time.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I think he felt like he'd rather die with her than die. Like, he didn't want her to die by himself, and he didn't want to. I understood that actually, but I don't know. I don't think it was realistic that she would like have had those good memories of him and gone to his apartment and all of that, and then just be like, okay, I'm going to kill you now. I'm like, come on, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I liked about it, but it was definitely of a lower quality than.
Yeah, I agree.
And was the writers that did it, were they the same writers that did Defenders or did Iron Fist?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure not. But I'm not 100% sure. Mm. But I thought I had heard that they were different. But, you know, I think part of the problem was, too, that they were written in a corner, not just with Danny, but, like, with all of this hand stuff. Because, like, they had to use the hand. They had to resolve that storyline. And I think now they at least have finally finished the hand storyline so they can focus on new things in their series, you know. But I felt like...
It was not the guy who did...
Yeah, I didn't think so. But it's like they had to do something to wrap the hand up, and I felt like there wasn't a lot to do with the hand.
It just all felt super, super anticlimactic.
Yeah.
So it was the producer from Daredevil.
It was the producer from Daredevil. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, and he it's actually a producer that worked on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it was alright. It wasn't the best. It wasn't the worst. It was enjoyable enough to watch.
It was a
good
setup for a continued series, I think.
I think so, too. I think what it did the best was that it kind of reset the storyline so that you don't have to deal with the hand anymore. And Danny can have a new purpose in life. And maybe they can fix his character with the writing.
It really gave some hope to, like, making a decent character out of the Iron Fist, because I think they're kind of doing, like, it was kind of similar to like Arrow in the first season. He was like, no one liked him, and they kind of set him up in a way where after that he tried to become better.
Oh, okay. I don't watch the Arrow, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot you can do to fix the writing if you're kind of willing to wrap up loose ends and then move forward. So yeah. We'll see what happens in the future. But I was pleased that Matt is not dead. I didn't think Matt Murdock. Yeah. I didn't think he would be dead, but I was pleased that they showed that they didn't. Okay, now I had a weird thought. Do you think it's possible he traveled back in time? Because I know he's in like a little Catholic rehab center, but what if it's
Could
a Catholic be. Center in the past?
Could be.
Because it was like a really simple old fashioned rosary and bed and all of that. And it didn't really look very modern. Now that could be just because it's the nuns, but you don't know. Why wasn't he in a hospital?
I hope they don't, because I'm not a fan of time travel stories. Because they get so convoluted so fast. It's just like.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I would feel about it, because I don't know. I like him in the present, but I don't know what they're going to plan to do with his series next.
Yeah, well,
they kind of seem like they want to let Iron Fist take over for him, at least for a little while. So I almost wonder if they would throw in a time travel thing just to kind of.
Yeah, or maybe.
Or
like
amnesia. I was thinking amnesia, too.
I was thinking amnesia. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The next series that's coming out is Punisher. So I think that'll
be really
good. Oh, cool.
Okay, good. Now, I hope with Punisher they actually tie up open up the mystery of like who Karen really is, because they've been hinting at it through all of the Daredevil series that she's not just this simple girl. Like, she knows how to handle a weapon. She knows a good weapon. And I wish they would finally just bring that out into the open. Like, don't make a Lost series out of it. You know, like, come on.
Yeah,
at like some point, you have to explain the mystery.
Forget all the mysteries that you started.
Well, not even just forget all the mysteries, but keep it mysterious forever because you never want to reveal anything. Like,
yeah, I just don't think they had enough time to focus on her in this series.
No, and that's why really I think they're putting her with Punisher. And she had a lot of chemistry with Punisher. So I think that's a good pairing. I think that's a good pairing.
So, I know you wanted to talk about some games you were playing.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Steam games recently that are either free or the most I spent on it was 40 cents. It was on sale. But I found some really fun new ones. Now, I like much different games than Matt does. I like very peaceful games that don't make me feel frightened that I'm going to die suddenly out of the blue. So, I don't mind like if there's some fighting or whatever, but I prefer that it's more RPG or things like that than just stuff where I'm worried that I'm just going to die and lose my game and feel stressed and anxious.
Low blood pressure games.
Exactly. Like, I don't want to feel anxious when I'm playing a game. I want to feel relaxed. So I found this one on sale for 40 cents called Hero of the Kingdom. And there is a sequel, which I haven't gotten yet because that one's like $5 or $6 or $7.
Ooh. That's a big money.
But it was a short game is the thing. Like, I beat it in like 3 or 4 hours. So I don't really want to spend like $7 on it. I want to wait till it goes on sale. But it was different than any game I've ever played because at first I was like, this seems too easy because they tell you exactly what to do. They're like, it's kind of like a point and click game. It's like, go here, do this, go here, do this. But then it starts getting more areas of the map become uncovered and you can buy and sell some stuff and you can like do some fishing and you can, then there's like so many different side quests. So you get to pick what order you want to do everything in. And it was just like really relaxing and really fun and easy, but not in a boring way.
How long did it take you to finish it?
Like 3 or 4 hours. So it was short. I mean, sad it was short.
For 40 cents.
I know.
Not
for 40 cents, you can't go wrong.
Now,
but
could you, it doesn't have any replayability? Could you play it again?
No, not really.
Pretty much the same thing.
Not really, because I was thinking about that. And like, they do have some achievements that you can try to get, like catch so many fish and do this and do that. But there's nothing really to do with your money once you've got it. And there's no, like, you eventually have to do the whole story or else there's really like not much else to do. So, yeah, I wouldn't say there's much replayability, no.
Yeah.
But it was kind of fun because it's like, it's kind of like a hidden object game in some ways. Like, you can forage for stuff. It's like nice hand-drawn art. So like, you can forage for stuff that's hidden, like mushrooms and eggs and things like that. You know, and you have to decide how you want to spend your money and, you know. But it was fun. It was very peaceful and very pretty and very fun.
Cool.
So, yeah. And then I have another new one. This one's free to play, called Legionwood, Tale of the Two Swords. Now, I am loving this one. This one is RPG pixel style. So it's like almost like a Pokemon style game, but you're not capturing the animals. But you know what I mean? Like, it's that pixel style.
It kind of looks like the early Final Fantasy. Like,
now, see, I never played those. Okay. Yeah, it's very much like a Super Nintendo type RPG style.
Yeah, it's like Final Fantasy 3.
Oh, okay. Trust Matt on that because I don't know.
I mean, that's what it looks like. I haven't played it.
Oh, it's so much fun.
So how, if it's free to play, is there like in-game purchases?
No.
Or how do they make
and
money?
Actually, I think the way they make money, I think this was originally designed for an earlier system or for even like a non-computer system. But they have like 4 or 5 other Legionwood games and they sell those. So I guess they're hoping that you'll love it enough
so
that
like
you'll buy the other ones, which frankly I am. And it's taken a long time to play. Like, I'm not beating it anytime fast, but it's just the kind of RPG like I love. Like, you can have 4 people in your party and, you know, you have to decide what specialization you want each one to have. So I have one who's a mage and I have one who's like strong on attacks, one who's your defender. And then you can raise the threat level of your defender so that everybody tries to attack your defender and not your other characters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've got the one girl who does the 2 weapons at a time, and you decide like how you want to do your equipment and your levels and all of that. And it reminds me of another like Super Nintendo game I played that was an RPG with robots that I played a long time ago. But it's like, it's a fun story, and it's just a pretty really fun game. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Sounds pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you like RPGs, it's a great RPG.
Yeah, I've been working on I want to build an arcade machine.
Yes.
And I made some progress on
You've
that.
You've been making
this week.
Good progress on that.
Well, I started looking into it. I've been doing a lot of research mostly.
Right.
And I finally found a cabinet style that I like. I'm going to go with this pedestal one. So I was looking at the hardware and I was thinking about buying a new computer for it.
Uh-huh.
But then like I priced it out, like even like a relatively cheap one would be like $500. But I just took my old computer.
Right.
And my old case and I cut that up.
Mind you, Matt has a ton of old computer parts and computers and things like this.
So I just built like an old XP machine and I cut up my old case to get like a baseboard for the motherboard and everything. And I got it running with MAME and a bunch of arcade games and some.
So explain how you got all these arcade games. They're like,
We're
not going to talk about that. But the thing is, like, it's like a computer. It's not. So I don't know, because like people like me probably wouldn't understand. It's like a computer and he's going to have like a computer monitor, but he's got like the joystick and like the arcade buttons. Yeah. Like he made a console with arcade buttons. Like,
I ordered the buttons online and I got a controller to hook them up to the computer. So it's not too hard. A lot of people do it nowadays. But, I'm going to make one that's going to be four players so we can play the old, like, four player cabinet games.
Like
the Simpsons one, the X-Men, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I got all the computer stuff running now. So now the next step is to put the cabinet together.
Yeah.
And, well.
And get some more.
And I got to order all the joysticks and everything.
Exactly, yeah.
I was doing more research on it today, and I was looking at the differences between the American and the Japanese components, and it sounds like the Japanese is the way to go.
That doesn't surprise me, because like that would be where the consoles and stuff originated in the first place, right?
Well, it seems like they're a little bit less durable, but they're much... They're much more responsive.
Okay, yeah, which you probably
I want to get this because I want to play fighting games with my friends, basically.
Yeah.
So everybody says get the Japanese if you're into fighting games. Because I originally didn't like the ball that goes on top of the Japanese ones, but I found out you can unscrew that and just buy a replacement, so it's like the bat. Like the American joysticks were all typically these bat ones, which is what I was used to. But so I'm probably gonna go with that. So the next step is to get all the controller hardware and then build the cabinet.
Yeah, that's cool.
Or the next step is to finish painting that room.
Yeah. So you know, this is our fixture upper house. But, so Matt's gonna take the small extra bedroom that we have and turn it into a retro gaming den.
Yeah.
Yes, it's gonna be fabulous.
Yeah, so, but I've got the hardware all up and running, and I've tested it with some of the games I want to play on it, so it works pretty well.
Yeah, that's good. That's going to be awesome.
That's exciting. It's cool. Yes. These kind of units, if you buy them from like companies that make them, stuff, they're like $3,000 to $5,000.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's a lot of money. So, yeah, this is going to be a very affordable DIY way to do it.
Did you have another game that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, well, I had another free one that I got. I was just on a roll. I needed some new Steam games, I guess. So this one's called Building the Great Wall of China 2. Now, I don't know where Building the Great Wall of China 1 is.
They didn't finish.
No, I don't know.
Because Building the Great Wall took so long, they had to do it over two games.
I guess, except I don't know where the first game is. Like, there is no Building the Great Wall of China 1. It's just, but it's like a strategy game. So you have to use your resources. Like you can make like a quarry to get rocks, and you can make a lumber yard to get lumber, and you have to have food for your workers. So you're trying to beat the level as fast as possible, and you have to like manage your resources to come up with enough stones to build the wall. But there's like usually other challenges and stuff along the way that you have to do in order to get, you know, you have to like come up with the food to feed people and all of that. So it's really fun. I really love it. Now, that one was free to play, but you only get the first 10 levels for free. Yeah. But you can buy more levels. They're not that expensive.
A lot of games have started doing that. Like, you can get the first chapter of the Batman Telltale game for free, but then all the other four chapters you got to pay for.
But you know what? I don't know. have a problem with that, though, because the people who make the game, they need to make money. They're trying to make a living.
I think it's a great way, because it gives you a chance to find out
like,
if
you're really want to
buy it. If you're
going to
enjoy the game or not.
And the rest of the game is not that expensive. I think it's like $10 or less.
Yeah.
So it's very affordable.
I like
but that. I don't know that there's going to be enough more levels, because I felt like I beat the first 10 levels really quick.
Fast,
and there's 40 more. But like, I don't know. I guess maybe since they get harder as you go, it'll be...
Well, I'll tell you, I prefer that kind of strategy than... There's a couple of games that... I didn't put this on the sheet, but I want to talk about it. There's two games that have gone into, I guess, early access over the past month.
Oh, okay.
One's Fortnite, and the other one is Dauntless.
Okay.
And both of these games are early access.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently when they release, they're going to be free to play.
Okay.
But if you want to play it now during early access, you have to buy one of their expensive Founders packs. So like if I wanted to play Fortnite, it was going to be $60.
What?
And the one to play Dauntless right now is $80.
And this is in the early release mode.
You can wait until it comes out and then play it for free. But that's going to be like 4, 5, 6 months from now. And, you know, now is when everybody's playing it on Twitch and you get all the people talking about it. Now,
that's frustrating.
Somebody at my work gave me a key to Fortnite. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess like he got a key when he bought his or something, and he gave it to me and I played it and I was pretty mediocre on it. It's similar to another game that I played before called Orcs Must Die 2.
Okay.
It's basically... It's a tower defense game, but you play in third person.
Oh, okay.
And it was just like, it was just kind of, it didn't really hook me in, and it was really easy. And there didn't seem to be voice chat built into it. And
And you know, you can get great tower defense games for under a dollar at GameStop. Like I have defended the Penguin,
which
is for the Wii.
Cool.
That one was pretty good, right?
One.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then Dauntless looks to be like basically Monster Hunter, but online, which is interesting because Monster Hunter World is coming out later next year.
So is this like a competitor to that?
I guess. But like from what I've seen of people playing it there's basically like 4 or 5 different creatures you can fight.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. Like you fight those creatures and you come back to town, you upgrade your gear, you go out and you fight them again.
And so
there's
they like want
no
like
exploring.
$60 or $80 for that?
Well,
that's pretty lame.
Their Founders Pack is $80 if you want to play it right now. If you get the lesser pack, it's
lame.
Like $40 and you get beta access, but I don't think that starts for another week or so.
My favoriteest games that I ever get are the cheapest ones.
Well, I'll tell you, if these games were free to play, I would be checking them out for sure. But with the way I'm really turned off by this whole monetizing scheme that they're doing. And I made the complaint to somebody random in a chat I was on Twitch.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, I'd be interested in this game, but it doesn't look like there's a lot of content there. And they're like, well, it's still an alpha. It's like,
then why are you charging $60 or $80?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if it's an alpha, that's fine, but like, don't ask for $80 for me just to play it to find out if I'm going to like it.
Exactly. Well, and it seems like maybe they're trying to fund themselves to do the rest of the development.
Oh, they absolutely
for the game.
Are. And
but at the same time, like, that's not really fair. Like,
I'm fine with like early access games. Like, I bought plenty of early access games, but they were always like $20.
Yeah, like, you don't.
You know,
I agree. Like 60 to 80 is a lot,
especially
for a game that doesn't have anything yet.
Be free to play when it comes out. Like,
I have so much more respect for like my current Steam games because like I love them and I'm totally gonna buy the sequels to them. And
you're definitely a budget gamer, like me.
I
bought so many. Like I didn't get into. To Dark Souls, which is one of my favorite games of all time, so years after it come out, because I got it for $5 on the Steam store.
Well, and that's like me. I didn't even buy my Wii until the Wii U came out, and then I was able to get like all these Wii games at GameStop for really cheap because the Wii U had just come out and they marked them all down. So I'm a budget gamer. I love budget games, but I find that they're so much fun. Like you can get so many amazing, but see, I like a different style of game too than you do or maybe some other people do. So if you like more of these kind of peaceful strategy type games, they tend to be cheaper.
Well, yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
But so the last story I wanted to talk about which was just, this was just announced today, but H3H3 won their lawsuit.
Now, what is H3H3?
So H3H3 is a channel on YouTube. They do commentary.
Okay.
You, I've shown you a bunch of their videos. The husband and wife team.
Oh, that's who that is?
Ethan and Ela.
I didn't know they had a lawsuit.
Yeah. So basically, they did a commentary video. They when they first started out, basically their whole channel was commentary videos on other people's content, basically.
Okay.
And this was at a time when like reaction videos were a big thing.
Right.
But, like, it was just like people watching other people's videos, but they would actually take it, like the videos I've shown you, where they would like watch it and they would break it down. They'd be like,
yeah, I really like what they do with it.
This,
yeah.
This well, they did this for this one guy, Matt Haas, I think his name was, who he's basically he would do like his video would basically consist of him doing like really lame parkour and then hitting on this woman like really creepily.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, it wasn't like real. It was obviously scripted.
Okay.
But like they did their typical thing.
Of course.
And they roasted this guy.
Of course. Yeah. As they do.
So. And because the guy was ridiculous. Like, it was like this made up fantasy that he had made that was just creepy. Just super creepy.
So the moment, did he sue them?
So he sued them. So basically, he started out by claiming their video. And the way the system on YouTube works is somebody copyright claims your video. You can counterclaim them and say, no, this is
fair use. Yeah.
And then they can go back and go, no, it isn't fair use. And then basically, once you get to a point, they either have to release the claim or sue you.
Oh, so
and
this guy decided to sue him.
Decided he was going to sue him, claiming that they were infringing on his copyright. And this has been going. They announced that they were being sued like 2 years ago or something.
Oh, wow.
And they were, you know, they were like, you know, we're in a position where we can fight this.
Right.
And we're going to fight it because we need to set a precedent for fair use.
Seriously, like that, like TV stations do that all the time.
So many people
have
been making content on YouTube and you know, it protects parody.
Right.
It protects commentary.
Right.
It protects criticism.
Right.
These things are all really important.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Today they announced that they finally won the case.
Thank God. Now, did he have to pay all the lawyer fees? Did he have to pay their fees as well?
I don't know about that. Now, some people, what people have been saying that they're hoping for is that they countersue him for the cost of the litigation.
Right, right.
And it's funny. They set up a...
Well, they might not even have to countersue because sometimes I think in the settlement, that's awarded to you anyway.
Yeah,
like you can ask for that in damages.
I don't know all the details. They just released the video while we were streaming about this, so I'm going to have to go and watch that later.
Okay, yeah, we'll check it out.
We can probably talk about it in our next episode.
Yeah. But, well, I'm glad they won. I love them. They are the best. And honestly, like when I was saying the news stations and stuff do that, like any legitimate news source takes other source material
also,
and makes commentary
about
it.
They also have lawyers. Where a lot of people on YouTube they get claimed
exactly, and
they
it's
can't
like,
do
what
anything
can you do?
About it because they
too
can't.
Tiny.
They can't afford it.
I know.
Now
who
they
can
did
afford a lawyer.
Now I heard that they set up a a fund or
like
an organization called FUPA or what was it standing for? It was like for unknown. It was like protection agency. Like basically to help people that get these kind of claims against them to help them to defend themselves.
Oh, good.
Like I said, don't quote me on that because I don't know the exact deal.
Right,
I was just
fine,
reading about it briefly today.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good news to hear that.
Yeah, definitely.
And,
that was definitely good news.
It's good. It sets a really good precedent.
Yeah.
And
well, and hopefully it will discourage other frivolous lawsuits like that.
Yeah.
You know, other people from suing because it's like, well, you know, hello.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny, too, because right when this happened today, a streamer that I follow on Twitch, he streams PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
He
actually claimed somebody's video. And there's like a whole backstory to this, basically. I'll go through it really quick. So... this guy streams PlayerUnknown's Battleground, and I don't know if you've seen that game much, but it's basically like 100-man free-for-all.
Oh, you've told me about it.
Like where 100 people drop into an island, you got to find weapons, you got to kill people.
And you just have to be the
last
person
standing.
Last man standing
survives. Yeah. This guy Grimms
or
has been...
last woman standing.
This guy Grimms won one of the first tournaments, and he's kind of blown up on Twitch as a streamer.
Okay.
And a couple weeks ago, there was basically some incident, mm-hmm. something where people were stream sniping him. Where stream
what
sniping
does that mean? I don't know what
is
that
where
means.
You're watching somebody play a game on Twitch, uh-huh. and then you try to get into their game to go harass them or like give you information about the game so they can find you. You can find them and kill them.
Oh, okay.
So basically, this happens to all streamers. Oh, okay. Basically, right. It's something that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
It's not really right, but
yeah.
And basically,
so someone watches the stream to see where they are in the game, yeah. so then they can go kill
them. So okay, there's this whole snafu on Reddit where people were complaining about him complaining about stream snipers, right?
Okay.
So now these kids decided that they would just follow him around in as many games as they could and honk at him from cars, and they wouldn't like kill him. They would just drive a car up to wherever he was, and they would honk at him. And now
it's kind of hilarious.
Now in this game, the horn sound is kind of busted where it's like super loud and super annoying. So this was really getting on his nerves, right? And then
oh my gosh, and then that's hilarious.
Last night they posted on Reddit. They said, "We are the stream honkers." And we made a video, and they made a compilation of them doing this to all these different streamers. Uh-huh. They got Grimms, they got Dr. Disrespect, uh-huh. they got Ninja, they got Anthony Kong.
Oh, that's why you called it the Honkopolis. Yeah.
So they made this video and they posted it on Reddit, and people loved it. Like whatever you say, like stream sniping. I understand, like, it's annoying for streamers.
Right.
But this video was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like, it was...
Well, and they were, I guess... Well, first of all, if they're really kids, but also, like, they were annoyed that he was a whiner. So, you know.
Well...
They were trying to do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think he kind of got unfairly called... Like...
Yeah.
I think Reddit kind of ganged up on him.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's
a lot
harsh.
Over this whole thing and took a lot of things he said... Yeah. Kind of out of context.
And okay, this, yeah.
Like,
and that's
tried to make him out
harsh.
To be like, so. And,
yeah.
But
anyway,
so
what's the.
So
what's
he got really
bottom
upset
line?
And he claimed the video, the Stream Honkers video.
Even though it was videos of themselves.
Well, it was them, but they used footage from their Twitch streams.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, it's a little iffy. It's pretty. It's mostly fair use. You might argue it, but I mean, you really have to go to court to say one way or the other. But
yeah.
So he claimed
fair
it because
use laws can be tricky
because of all this back and forth he's had with trolls on Reddit.
Uh-huh.
Basically, he just
uh-huh.
kind of he was
he just kind of claimed
angry.
Just to claim it.
He got angry. He admits this in uh-huh. his twit longer. He uh-huh. he said, you know, I was all this build up and I just uh-huh. got angry and I got mad and I wanted to, and so that's why he claimed it. And uh-huh. basically, Ethan from H3H3 called uh-huh. him out and said, "Dude,
right.
why are you claiming this video that's clearly fair use?"
Right.
And he called him out on Twitter, and uh-huh. then he apologized, and he said he's gonna take back the claim.
Oh, good, good.
But
good.
That
that's
was
positive
kinda,
outcome.
Yeah,
right. But, because it's like you know what, laws are laws for a reason. Like you can't just
In this whole drama back and forth between him and like kids on Reddit and trolls mm-hmm. and stuff, I've really been on Grimms' side because I feel like he's kind of like they're being unreasonable mm-hmm. and he really seems like a chill guy on stream,
right.
And he's usually like, and he's even said like he's tried to ignore a lot of the trolling,
yeah.
which is it's the right thing to do, you know,
you
can't feed into it, and it was just kind of like a culmination, but like claiming the video, I think, was a mistake. He shouldn't have done that.
Well, I think that's good. He's backing off it and he's willing to admit it.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a big person to admit when you're wrong.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
And, you know,
it's frustrating for him as a streamer too because that's the way he makes money, right?
Yeah,
when that's your revenue source and people are like messing that up for you, that is very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, just like if somebody came into the McDonald's where you worked and started...
Maybe I don't work at McDonald's.
Well, like, I'm talking to the people. I'm talking to the trolls.
Don't assume our listeners
I'm
work at McDonald's.
I'm talking to those trolls. Not our listeners, but this is for the trolls uh-huh. out there. You know, he doesn't come into your job
right.
and just blare an air horn in your face all day.
Exactly. Exactly. Like bullying is... But like, hey, I'm going to go back to my teacher roots. Bullying is bullying, and it's not right. Even if it's funny, it's not right.
Well,
that video
was funny, though.
So. I bet it was funny, but...
It's just the way they present it. Like, we are the stream honkers.
And they're kids. And do you think they really are kids?
They sounded like kids.
They sounded like kids, yeah. Kids are immature, and sometimes that is funny.
And they got banned from the game.
Because okay, well, that's good. That's an appropriate reaction.
Because the devs have set outlined and said, we don't allow stream sniping in this game.
Oh, well, there you go. So that was a very appropriate consequence for their action. So
exactly. But yeah, that's why I wrote down on the
I wondered what that meant. He had the honkopalypse, and I was like, what is that?
That's and I'm funny sure though. Right now, if you could tune into a stream, people are probably honking at him right now.
Yeah, well,
because when you get exposure
stop.
Like that, it just
know that's a shame for him, but
yeah, but he's a cool guy. He's Grimm's on Twitch.
That's good.
He's an entertaining guy. He seems like a cool guy. So
good luck to him then.
Yeah. So I think that's about it for now. We're getting to about an hour.
Yep.
But if you enjoy the podcast and you'd like to show support, please donate to one of our charities. We got Small Angels. It's a Frederick County, Maryland-based 501c3 nonprofit, no-kill, all-volunteer organization dedicated to rescuing and rehoming gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, and rats.
Yep, and that's who we're foster rat parents for. Yep.
And I said that all in one breath.
Yes, good for you. And then there's also Extra Life Charity. You can support Matt's stream for that. All that money goes to Children's Miracle Network, which is for children's hospitals. We support the one in D.C. And all the money goes directly towards patient care. So no administrative costs taken out of it.
And we're just 2 months away now. And end of October, I think it's going to be the Saturday and Sunday of the 28th and 29th. I'm going to be streaming. I'm gonna
and Matt will play at least 1 minute of any game you request for every dollar you donate. As long as it's a game he has in his library. But he has a lot of games.
I'm not
going
to spend more money than
you donate. Than
you
donate. Exactly.
But I have a lot of games.
He has a lot of games.
I've got over 200 Steam games and a ton of console. I got PS3, Xbox 360, Nintendo. I got it all. So
yes, chances are good that he can play a game of your request.
So if you want
or send him a free to play game or something like that.
If you want me to play an hour of
Candy Crush,
My Little Pony Adventure Princess.
Oh no!
Just donate $60 and say that's what. Don't do that, but.
Well, his mom had him play an hour of Candy Crush last year.
Yeah, my mom did have me play an hour of Candy Crush.
That was cute.
Wasn't bad, but I also had to, I had to sign into a different account because once you get to a certain point, you run out of energy.
Yeah.
You can't keep playing.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those freemium games.
Exactly. Yeah. All right.
So, all right, guys. Thanks for listening.
We'll
see you next time.